on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/realID or visit your local DMV.
This is Amber Rose Washington, music producer and author of the best-selling book, Hiding From Myself. And you're listening to the Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
And I am Al Cooley, host of Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Today I have Brian and Jared from the Resistance Podcast, and also joining us is Brian's wife, Summer. The Resistance Podcast is a podcast on politics, current events, and so much more. This ought to be fun. Welcome to Ghosts in the Valley.
Hey, thank you for having us, man. This is going to be awesome and a cool change for us. I'm kind of excited to chat with you about the paranormal.
Yeah, and we're going to get into also your podcast that just got off the ground, and it's a tough field out there. You know, there's a lot of podcasts out there now.
Yeah, there really is. And, you know, like our podcast started, our first episode was back in November last year. So, yeah, like I said, we're pretty fresh, and, you know, surprisingly enough, it's actually grown pretty stinking quick. So we're pretty excited about the turnout, and I'm really looking forward to see where this goes.
And I'm going to put all your links in the bottom of the show notes so everybody can go down there and check out your podcast and where they can reach you and find out all the information on you and the podcast. I know you texted me, Brian, a couple of days ago, and it was about doppelgangers.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, me being a fan of, you know, the paranormal, and I watch like all these paranormal shows, you know, like Ghost Adventures and the Ghost Hunters and Kindred Spirits. And so it was funny. They, one of their episodes, they were talking about doppelgangers because someone had an experience of seeing, I think it was like a spouse or a friend, something of that nature that was, you know, behind them. And they talked to him, you know, and they didn't get any kind of response. And then that person just kind of disappeared. So they're trying to figure out, you know, exactly what was going on. I was like, well, man, that's kind of strange. I've, in my ghost hunting time, like I've never heard of doppelganger spirits before. And so I'd never, you know, I took a little bit of time and looked into it and, you know, saw it's kind of like a more of a mythological type deal. And then a friend of ours that we know personally was talking about a haunting that they have and how her husband thought that he had saw her in the kitchen and she wasn't there. She was in the basement the whole time. And so she started talking about doppelganger, and I was like, holy crap, here we are like 1 week and there's been two things I've seen that have talked about doppelgangers, and I've never even experienced it or heard anyone else talk about it.
Yeah, that was strange when you sent me that, and I did some research on it. It was kind of funny. My brother, who lives in Georgia, and he just stopped by, matter of fact, a couple of days ago, and he showed me a picture of myself, you know, say, hey, this is what I ran into today, and I'm like, oh my god, that's me, you know. It's kind of scary when you look at different pictures of yourself. And then I did more research on it, and they say there's six of you around the world. I mean, identical you. I mean, that looks like you, talks like you, has the same characteristics as you. That's kind of wild, you know. And now I'm getting people contacting me since I reached out yesterday telling me you have a doppelganger from, you know, you could have one from the 1800s.
Right.
So to me, that would be, because what I was researching is a doppelganger is a living spirit. So it's different from what I'm used to investigating.
For sure. Like, that's what caught me off guard when I heard about it so much just in like a week's period of time. I was like, wow, this never happens. I've never heard of this. Now all of a sudden it's kind of everywhere. It's a little strange.
So one of you are into the paranormal and the other one's not so much?
Yes, yes. I had my own paranormal team some years ago and, you know, did some ghost hunting for a couple of years. And, you know, since gotten out of it, my buddy Jared, he said he doesn't believe in it too much, but he has had some experiences, you say.
Yeah, I've had a couple of them. I mean, nothing like significant or major, but the stuff that makes you kind of scratch your head. I'm very much a skeptic by nature. So
that's okay. You know, I mean, a lot of people are. I mean, you know,
for me, it's like with aliens, too. Like, they would have to literally show up right in front of my face for me to be like, oh, okay. I do really find the paranormal stuff very intriguing. Like, I watch all the movies on it and the shows and stuff like that. So there's like, I love going to the haunted places, basically just to see, like, you know, what all the hype's about. But as a Christian, I don't really believe in spirits per se. Mm-hmm. But I definitely believe in demonic entities. And then angels as well. So kind of the way I lean towards it is like, absolutely, I think there's people are having these experiences, but it could be on the demonic level, not just spirits.
I find that too, you know, growing up in the church, you know, I don't know how to put it, you know, a lot of churches frown upon even mentioning anything demonic or paranormal from the Bible when there's 58 exorcisms were in the Bible. There, you want to find some paranormal stories, you just have to read the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've had people that actually get rid of me as a friend. They said I'm unchristian because I have a paranormal podcast. Kind of worrying to me, you know, that because I do believe in heaven and hell. I do, you know, that I have had guests on here that don't believe you can move a spirit on because they don't believe in heaven or hell, you know. So if you get rid of a spirit, you're killing that spirit. And that's their belief.
Gotcha.
I do believe there is a God, you know, and you can move a spirit on. It has to be on their terms, you know. You just can't relate to it that well.
True.
You know, like myself, you know, so I had a personal experience as a child. So I never believed in the ghost or spirits either until I was up 12 years old. And even as an adult, going on different investigations, 9 times out of 10, I didn't catch nothing. It's like going fishing.
Exactly.
You can fish all day and you're not going to come home with nothing.
This is true.
With me, you know, I don't catch nothing on no equipment. It's my body as a tool. You know, it's when you're pushed from behind, your ears flick, cool breeze going through you, and it's 95 degrees outside.
Exactly.
Right.
Until something like that happens to you, I don't think you really would believe too much in it.
You know, it's kind of like with myself, you know, when I was a kid, I never, you know, had any paranormal experiences or anything like that. The only experience I had as a child is I heard a voice. Then I can't explain where it came from. And, you know, it's clear as day. There's a male's voice, very soothing type of male voice. And I was probably, I don't know, maybe 5. I was playing with this toy and it had these little games on it. And there's this one game that I, for the life of me, I could not beat. And I was sitting there on the floor in the kitchen. I was like plucking away at this thing and it's getting mad. And I was like, come on, man. Like, what the heck is going on with this thing? Why can't I get this right? And I set it down on the floor and just looked at it. And then there was this voice that I heard that told me exactly what I needed to do. And I was like, whoa, like that was really weird. And I looked around and no, it wasn't my dad, but there was this very distinct male voice that came through. And I was like, well, okay. And so I went through and I punched in on this little toy exactly how that voice told me to do it. And it was right. That was the first time I had beat that game. And it told me step by step how to do it. So, you know, after that, I never had any other experiences until, you know, I decided one day to kind of put my own team together. And then, you know, you start catching things or experiencing things, you know, while you're out on an investigation and stuff. So it's been pretty cool. And I've been intrigued ever since.
Do you put like a paranormal team together?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I had one here in the city that I live in. And there was a group of, I think we had like 3 or 4 in our team. And then there was also another local team of about 3 or 4. And we would typically team up, you know, and do the investigation together, just, you know, to have more equipment and more experiences and things. And, you know, we'd sit maybe 4 to 6 hours, you know, in someone's residential place or, you know, a place of business and go home and take the next few days, like sitting there mulling over hours and hours of recorded audio and video and everything else, just, you know, trying to find something out of the ordinary that happened, or, you know, talk about an experience that we had. But I enjoyed it. It was super cool. The only bad thing about it was the hours that you had to put in after the fact.
Right.
But now my wife, Summer, she's had some interesting things that I might let her tell you about, because she's one of these that I would probably say she's a little sensitive. So I'll let her talk about that.
All right.
I didn't have any experiences until I was a teenager. But when I was young, I mean, I'm talking, I remember being 4 and 5 years old, and I had these recurring dreams, just really strange recurring dreams where I would be like running through the forest. And I knew that I was an adult. I know this sounds really weird, but there was something after me. And the end of my dream would always end up, you know, everything would go black. I think I was captured. And there was another one that, it, to me, to this day, I still feel like I was in like a castle or something of some sort. You know, there was like candles on the wall, and I was laying on the floor crying. I knew that people were coming to get me. I know this all sounds really weird, but I was having these dreams when I was like 4 and 5 years old, and I had them for years. We lived in this house with, well, I obviously lived with my parents, but I just always had this terrible feeling in the bedroom upstairs across from me. And to this day, I will still have dreams about it, and I never see anything, but it's like weird things will happen in the dream that will move things, or you just know that there's a really bad presence there, if you will. So to this day, that house, even thinking about it, still creeps me out. The first thing that really happened to me, and to this day, I don't know if it was coincidental or not. I don't think it was. I was in my grandpa's basement, and I also used to get that feeling down there when I would, you know, get to a particular area. Like in the back corner, there was a bedroom back there, and I just got like this horrible feeling, you know, like the feeling where you get like the hair stand up on the back of your neck. And I was down there one day just kind of snooping through some things, and I felt very paranoid. Like I was really on edge, and I opened a chest, and I leaned the chest, the top of the chest back, and I was looking through, looking at old pictures and things. And I kind of knew I was not supposed to be down there. And I leaned over to really like start looking at things, and that chest shut on my head. I tell you what, I have never ran so fast, but it was not in any position to where it would have just fallen down on me. Like something had to have taken it and shut
it. Slammed it.
Yes. And it hit me, and I thought I was dead. You know, it's one of those things. I really did. I never went back down there alone. I will never forget that terrible feeling and just feeling like something was going to come after me.
You get hurt in your dream?
So in my dream, I would know that I was like getting, it was like I was getting captured, if you will. But do you want to hear something strange? Is that my ancestors were actually involved in the Salem witch trials. Like one of my grandfathers was one of the main judges, James A. Sewell. Was one of the main judges in the Salem witch trials. So I don't know if I connect that or not, but I just have always had, you know, weird feelings and just thoughts and, you know, stuff on that.
And you believe it or not, you're not the first one that has contacted me about being related to somebody from the Salem witch trials. One was a person whose great, great aunt, one of the witches, put to death, supposedly a witch, the Salem witch trials, you know. Yes, it's crazy, man. I was like, I didn't mean to cut you off, Jared, when you was talking about an incident was happening to you.
Oh, sorry.
An incident that happened to you that you didn't know if you believed it or not. Or
oh, I'm going to have to tread lightly on this because I do have family that listen to these. But I was at I was at my mother-in-law's house. And I love my mother-in-law to death. I really do. I do.
You have to say that.
let me start off with that. But her and my father-in-law had divorced years ago. And my wife told me that she remembered her mom leading her and her sister in prayer for bad things to happen to their dad, which is bizarre in and of itself. But and so in my thinking, I'm like, hey, you just opened some doors there. That you opened Pandora's box, basically. Mm-hmm. So I've always had a weird presence when I go to her house. Well, we was visiting, this is 2 years ago. I was in one bedroom. They just have like full-size beds. I'm a big guy. I take up the full size myself. So my wife and my son were in a room across the hall from me. So I'm laying there in the bed and I'm reading my book, and I can audibly hear like breathing, like somebody like ragged breathing And there's a closet too next to me. And I'm like at first I thought my wife was snoring from across the hall. I'm like, holy crap. I'm like, that's freaking loud. Like, what the heck? And I step out in the hallway. Their room is dead quiet. I go back in. I lay in the bed and it starts back up again. I'm like, what? And there's the closet next to me. Now the door is somewhat ajar. And I know it wasn't because I remember looking over there before I left the room. So I get up and I throw the closet doors open real quick. There's nothing there. So I shut them. I lay back down. And now I'm about to doze off. I put the book down and it starts back up again. So I'm like, I don't know what the heck is going on here. So I grab my bag and my books and I go across the hall. I lay in the floor in the room with my wife and son to the point to where I grabbed my gun out. I just had it laying on the nightstand above my head because I'm like, something's wrong. Something's off here. We had been back and forth out there because my father-in-law, he was sick. He was dying of cancer. And this is my wife's biological father, not her stepdad. So we were, and this is in Oklahoma, so we're driving back and forth all the time. Well, we were out there and we was in the same room where I had that experience. And my son's in the bed with me. And my wife had just came in and we were talking and he was sound asleep. And while we're talking, he all of a sudden, like his body, almost like something like pricked him or something. He just jumped real hard, starts screaming. And like his body temperature, he's like, he's on fire. I'm talking like he spiked a huge nasty fever. So I don't know. I'm not a scaredy cat, but I'm like, I always have this weird vibe the whole time I'm in that house.
And do you believe in that there's demons out there or evil spirits?
I certainly believe in demons. Absolutely. I think that could have been like a demonic entity. Like if she's praying for bad things to happen, although that's like 15, 20 years ago, you just opened up a door, in my opinion.
Oh, you did, because you know what they say, do not go out and search or even attempt to do that, leaving like say through a Ouija board. So whenever you right. are even messing with something, if you don't know what you're messing with, man, don't mess with it. You know, that's been my thing with, even when I go on paranormal investigations, it's like, I know what I'm looking for. I know who I know the history of the building or the history of the person I'm trying to contact, you know, but if I don't know it, I don't say, is anybody in here, you know, leave me a mess, you know, it's so dangerous. And I listened to another podcast the other day where a gentleman was on there and he made a statement that just kind of like made my blood curl. And it's like, he says, anybody can do a minor exorcism. And I'm thinking to myself, there is no such thing as a minor exorcism.
A minor exorcism.
Right. You know how many people there he's contacting out there and telling these people that. Even I've been doing this for like 40 some years and I've only come across demonic twice in my whole, because most of it's not demonic. It's not that at all, you know. And in both those cases, I stepped away from it because I'm not qualified to do that. And people that take it lightly out there, it's nothing to play with.
That's what I was getting at when I said, like, I think she just opened Pandora's box. And it's like, mm-hmm. So I definitely wholeheartedly believe, like, in the spiritual realm, in the sense of there's angels, there's demons. And I do believe that a lot of these things that we see or whatever could be just demonic forces at play.
Could be. Right. I always tried to debunk the situation, you know, because 9 times out of 10, it's not demonic or ghost or spirit. Sometimes it is a tree branch rattling against the house, or it's a pipes on the basement, or there's a lot of things that you want to rule out.
You know, I've always found that like the pre-investigation interview that you do with, you know, the family members or the business owner or whatever, I feel like tells you a lot before you even go in and investigate or even decide to investigate. Sometimes, man, you get some people out there and, you know, they're not exactly, they don't have all their marbles. So, you know, you're sitting there and talking to them like, okay, this is probably not a legitimate paranormal thing. These people mm-hmm. are a little interesting. So a lot of things, like you were saying, you have to take with kind of a grain of salt and, you know when people are telling you the truth, or, you know, when you're dealing with someone who's just watched too many paranormal TV shows and want to be cool or say that they have, you know, experiences that are going on when they're really not. So
mm-hmm.
I always would do them too, because I wasn't someone who like you, I didn't want to mess with anything demonic. You know, I didn't have the proper tools or the capability to deal with anything like that. So I would, you know, ask certain questions, you know, to the family members or whatnot, and to try and make sure that it wasn't demonic. You know, like if this is just something that seems like a, you know, a typical, you know, human spirit haunt, then sure, or something residual. Okay. Yeah. No, no problem. But I wasn't about to dive into a demonic one on purpose on my own.
Mm-hmm. Being from Kentucky, do you have a lot of Bigfoot stories down there?
More in like your eastern and western Kentucky areas. So where I'm at, I'm closer into Louisville. And you don't really hear about that too much. You mainly have to travel out to the mountains, or I think there's one of the state parks in Indiana where there's a lot of sightings. Even a buddy of mine wanted me to grab my camera and go Sasquatch.
Would that maybe be Evansville?
It might be. I can't remember the name of the state park, but there's one up there. Apparently, that's a hot spot.
It was a park in Kentucky. I can't remember the name of it. Bigfoot sighting not long ago.
Interesting.
No, I was just going to say Henderson, Kentucky, which is just across the river from Evansville, they have what they call the hillbilly beast. And that's, oh, it gets even better.
That's the first one for me.
down where I'm from, he's called the wood booger.
Oh my golly. Now that's just Uncle Pete, man.
So if you go over into, I got an aunt that lives just over in across the state line into Virginia, and like they have a big monument of him up in the mountains, and they've got like the wood booger grill and stuff like that in their little town, dude. That's what they call it. They call him the wood booger. It's freaking hilarious. I'm like, hillbilly beast and the wood booger. Like, really?
you know, I learn stuff on this show all the time. I just learned that one.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to start using the word wood booger a lot more. I've actually got asked to assist another paranormal investigator on a demonic case. There was a lady, she actually came in to Kentucky from Kansas, and she was dealing with a possession issue. So she wasn't dealing with like full possession. Like, you know, it would come in and leave, you know, kind of sporadically. She couldn't get any of the Catholic priests to help her. A lot of people were like, no, she's just nuts. She's skits, you know, whatever. This lady that I was working with, she was like, you know, I've talked to her and she's like, she's not crazy. This lady apparently has dealt with demonic forces for quite a while. And she's like, she's telling legitimate truth. So she's like, I'm going to fly her in. And she's like, how would you feel sitting in and giving me a hand? I can use all the equipment we can get. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, well, let me meet this lady first and, you know, see how I feel about it. Cause this is not something I necessarily really want to mess with, but I'm curious at the same time. So, you know, she flies in and we all meet at a Waffle House. And this lady, she is just like this ditzy blonde, you know, and she's probably in maybe like her mid or late 40s. And we're sitting there talking, you know, she's talking about her experiences that she's had and what's been going on. As I'm sitting there, like I haven't eaten anything. I've just been like sipping on a Coke or whatever. And all of a sudden, I just get hit in the face with like just complete nausea. Like my mouth starts watering. You know, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what is going on? I'm getting hot. The nausea is building up more. My mouth is watering more and I'm starting to get really uncomfortable. I'm like sweating. I'm like, my God, where did this come from? Like, I'm not sick. I was fine, you know, when I sat down and it just kept getting worse and worse. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm sitting here talking to this lady. Like, what? I felt like I was having a reaction to whatever she was carrying around with her.
Because
it's like the more we talk about it, the worse it got. It eventually subsided, but I thought that I wasn't going to like get up out of the booth quick enough and make it to the bathroom before I just gapped all over the place. And I don't even know why, you know, it was like there was nothing wrong with me. But yeah, that case is really interesting. Like I felt okay enough to go and, you know, set up some equipment. She actually did it in her house. I brought all my equipment over. Like I said, so this lady was very chatty, very ditzy.
The other investigator did it in her own house?
Yeah. Yeah. She brought her crew in and myself and of course, this lady. And she's like, we're going to do it in my home. I was like, okay. So here we are sitting in this lady's house about to start this stuff. When she started, you know, into like trying to get the demon to come through, asking, you know, very targeted questions. When it did come through, this lady changed completely. She was very quiet, very monotone, and very short answers, and sat Indian style on the floor in front of the couch and stared at her lap the whole time.
I'll be right back with my conversation with Brian, Jared, and Summer right after these brief messages.
Hey guys, this is Vanessa. My podcast is Life Paranormal with Me. Listen as I serve you all things spirit, paranormal, and unexplained. Join me every other Saturday as my guest host and I recount our own experiences that will perplex and utterly terrify you. Life Paranormal with V is available on all major platforms such as Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Join the Lifer fam by following me on Twitter at VLifeParanormal. Follow, like, subscribe, and hit that notification button so you can always catch a ride on this spooky vibe.
This is Beth Darlington, paranormal investigator and owner of Access Paranormal, and you're listening to the Ghost in the Valley podcast.
So like I said, you know, her whole appearance and mentality completely changed. You know, she would stare at the floor the whole time, Indian style, and she didn't look up for anything. She just stared right at her lap. You know, she was like, "What's your name? Tell me what your name is." And just sit there and looking at the floor. She's like, "I'm not going to tell you." Just very monotone like that. She's like, "No, you need to tell me what your name is." She's like, "You know who I am. We've met before." Okay. So why don't you just tell me your name then, since we've met before? And I'm like, "My name is Zeus." And she was like, "Don't give me that. You know, don't give me some BS name. I'm not falling for your 'I'm Zeus' garbage. What's your real name?" And then still sat there for a second longer. I was like, "Well, I come from the water." And Vicky, which was the name of the investigator, she was like, "Okay, we're going to stop for a second." She's like, "I know what we're dealing with. I know exactly what it's talking about." I was like, "Oh, crap. Okay." So they took a break, went out on the deck, and I stayed inside for a minute. And one of her other investigators got down in the floor in front of her and, you know, knelt down. Her, she's still looking, you know, straight down at the floor, Indian style. And he's like, "You're not allowed to be in this body. This body belongs to Christ. This is a body of God. You don't have the permission to be there." And kept going on and on. And she eventually, as she was sitting there, her head snapped straight up, looked at him dead in the eye, and yells, "What is this, an effing exorcism?" And he's like, "Oh, no, no, that's not what we're doing." But he's like, hey, Vicky, we need you back in here." But I mean, it was like, it's just her whole head just snapped straight up, like really sharp, and screamed at the top of her lungs right in his face. And they come back in there and, you know, she starts questioning whatever it was. And, you know, it got to a point where, you know, she was speaking in another language. And I found this out after listening to the audio recordings, but there was like music in the background that wasn't there. There's weird, like, animal noises and hissing going on in the background that you didn't hear while you were there. Yeah. And so the language that she spoke, they actually took to one of the Catholic priests.
Was it Latin?
Well, that's what they were thinking. And they're like, "Hey, can you translate this for us?" And they had it for a couple of days, and they eventually got back with her and like, "We have no idea what this is saying. Like, we don't know what language this is." And they're like, "It's not Latin. It's something probably older, but we couldn't tell you anything about it." And I was like, "Wow, it was absolutely incredible." Time went on, and you know, we kind of went our separate ways with some things, but I never really heard like what the final outcome was with this particular lady. But that was the weirdest experience of my life, and I was just like, I don't know if I want to mess with that again or not, because the night that I went home, I was, you know, laying in bed asleep, I was having this horrific dream. It woke me up. And when I woke up, there was something that was actually sitting on my chest, and I felt it get off of me. I was like, "Okay, no, not doing that ever again." Yeah. Freaked me out.
Do you believe you can carry that home with you?
Yeah. You know, that was the thing. We never really did anything to kind of make sure that nothing followed me afterwards. Uh-huh. And so I kind of did my own thing at home after I had that experience, and I haven't had anything else again, you know, outside of trying to find stuff on my own, you know, but that was enough to freak me out quite a bit.
You know, because it is powerful. I had one on, I have a guest on last year from Minnesota. You know, you go in and his team used medicine bags
okay
to put on them for protection.
Right.
Because it was powerful, you know, and they went in with a crucifix and a light came through the building, hit the crucifix so hard, hit the medicine bag on his one partner, and it blew out the smithereens. And when it was all said and done with, the crucifix was, Jesus was, you know, how it's riveted on the cross.
Right.
Jesus was off the cross.
Wow. That's intense.
That's intense. Here's a weird thing. When they picked up the broken crucifix, they never found Jesus.
Whoa.
I mean, where did that go? That's pretty intense. So when people play around with these Ouija boards and the satanic stuff they get into, think it's cute or it's dangerous, man. Nothing to play with. And yeah, what do you stand like on UFOs? You believe they're out there?
That's been one thing I've kind of gone back and forth on. And my dad, like ever since I was little, you know, he was like, man, just abduct me already. I want to see y'all face to face, you know, like just he'd stand out there like, come on, come and get me, you know? So of course I was like, yeah, man, aliens. Yeah, for sure. You know, let's do this. And I was like, you know, space is awfully big for just, you know, 7 billion people. I don't know. I'm kind of a place now.
I've never seen a UFO. I mean, I've had friends of mine that's in the law enforcement that have chased them.
Right.
But
there's something out there that's odd. I don't know if it's actually an alien race or not.
I guess the last time I was telling about it, I hate to keep boring my listeners with the same stories, you know. You know, but what do you do when you have 10 law enforcement, I mean, from county to police to sheriffs, state police, chasing these UFOs,
right?
And it's going 35 miles an hour. Then all of a sudden, it's like, I mean, it's you can't. I mean, so they're estimating it goes between 60 to 80,000 miles an hour from point A to out of sight,
wherever.
Lord.
So when you have all this on camera, you have this from the police officers, and then the next day, this is a friend of mine, it's on the police department. Two of them, actually two different police departments, that chased this thing in 1994.
Wow.
They're told the next day, because the federal government comes in and they tell them, all of them, State Patrol and everybody, to put in their report, it was a weather balloon.
I said always a weather balloon.
Now, have you ever seen a weather balloon go 60,000 miles an hour?
No, not even after it pops.
Right. You know, it's just, to me, if you have 300 calls coming in, and from the city, you get the newspapers there, the TV cameras are there, law enforcement's there, and then the next day it's not none of the papers, not on the news, and it's not even mentioned. And here's the thing, man, my friends that they're retired now, but you know, they still cannot come on my show and talk about that.
And it's been what?
So how many years ago? 94. Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's stuff out there. 28 years. Okay, there you go. She's the math person.
Oh, there you go.
He's like Rain Man, but it's fine.
28 years ago.
Definitely 28.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's enough stuff that goes on out there that is super unexplainable. So I don't know if it's like secret government, you know, spy planes or, you know, vehicles, whatnot, or are we dealing with something more supernatural? Like are these balls of light, are they just angels? You know, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I had one person said that, what if UFOs are, they just look out of focus. So that's why you never get a clear picture, because that's just how they look. So, you know, it's like one of those things, you never can get a clear picture of anything.
Well,
so.
You know, I something I heard the other day that kind of like blew my mind was like, if you go outside and you look at a star, that star you're looking at was 30 years ago. You know, if that star blew up right now, you would still see that star 10 years from now.
Right.
That blows my mind, you know, because that telescope they just sent up to look into the next galaxies.
Right.
That's going to be wild, because they say in the other solar system, there's supposedly a planet like ours. So
yeah, I've heard that.
But they can look back also. I don't know how they do that. So you're going to look back in time?
Yeah. Like, what if we're just staring at Earth before it got to where it was?
And did God create? I'm assuming if God created Earth and everything in the universe, and everything is made by God, right?
Right.
So is it possible maybe something more intelligent than us out there? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't know if there was, you know, did he leave a Bible for that other crew, or, you know, is it all just made up? You know, it's funny that you say it, because there is a lot of stuff from way, way, way back when, like thousands and thousands of years ago, that they should not have been able to build.
Yes.
And that we can't duplicate today. So there's either the whole ancient astronaut theory, or they just had technology that was way more advanced than what we have now that just got lost, you know, over time and because of the flood, and we had to start over again. Because if you think about it, you know, they were on Earth for what, 2,000 plus years? Mm-hmm. And how long has it been since the flood? What, like 800,000 years maybe? So we still have another 1,000 years to go before we can even catch up to where they were. I don't know. It blows my mind because it's super crazy. You know, I don't know how they did half the stuff they did.
Hey, no, that's the wood booger.
The wood booger. I got to remember that one. I got to write that one down.
Yeah, the wood booger.
Is that only in Kentucky, or is it, you know?
That's from those moonshine backwoods drinking Eastern Kentucky folks.
It's probably someone who wears a white lightning tank top or something like that.
Did you see that thing run through the woods? That's a freaking wood booger.
And I did have somebody ask me last year, did I think that Bigfoot and aliens were connected? You know, because his point was, everywhere you've seen Bigfoot, for some reason, somebody spotted a UFO around a body of water in that area.
Interesting.
So that was fascinating, you know. And now my thing was, why haven't they ever found the body of a Bigfoot or the skeletal remains?
Yeah, you know, I've heard theories on it. Some people said that, you know, Bigfoot's an interdimensional being. And so if it ever died, it goes back to where it came from.
What does that mean? What is that?
So, you know, you always hear people talk about, you know, different dimensions, like Earth has so many dimensions. Like there's another version of you in another dimension doing kind of the same thing, but a little different.
I can't comprehend that right now.
Yeah, I can't either.
I'll talk to you in about 3 days after I process that.
I think you have to have marijuana in your hand in order to understand that one completely. But
yeah, there's something connected with that. I mean,
I don't know. You know, it's really bizarre. Like some of the stuff that they come up with, I'm like, gosh, you know, like did you witness that, or is this just some crazy drug trip thing that you had going on and you remembered it after you came down? I'm not sure.
Well, back to the UFO thing, like I'm not a believer in them. However, did the Navy not just release?
The Pentagon released last year the report on, I think it was 23 cases. And
yeah,
and how funny something that they didn't, out of those 23, they only concluded one, and it was a weather balloon. So go figure that.
Man, these pesky weather balloons.
Yeah, my dad, he was a career law enforcement officer here in Louisville, and there was one of their pilots for the air unit called their commander at home and was like freaking out because he was sure they just witnessed a UFO. And then, of course, it comes out that, no, it's just weather balloons. Like, that's their scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird, man. I mean, something's up.
Was at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base last year. Isn't it kind of funny that they sell alien stuff and spaceship stuff in their souvenir department, you know, but you're not allowed to go back and even get near Hangar 18 or talk about it to anybody there. I find it kind of right. They'll take your money.
Right. Yeah, we only want to see the real thing.
Everything that supposedly that falls from the sky, alien or unexplained, is sent to Wright-Patterson. It's interesting to think about anyway. I mean,
yeah, I've never been up there personally. I mean, I've been in the Army 10 and a half years, and I've never seen anything weird or been around anything that was questionable or odd. But
you got the most highly trained pilots out there, billion-dollar aircraft, and they're traveling at Mach 3, and these things pass them at 80,000 miles an hour. I mean,
yeah, they're all sitting up there in the cockpit doing shrooms, just hallucinating away.
Because no humans going to survive that G-force. So I'm thinking, is it a drone that can go 80,000 miles or 60,000 miles an hour? I don't know, you know.
They say with the anti-gravity technology is that supposedly if you're in a vehicle that's anti-gravity, you never feel the forces of Earth on you when flying at high rates of speed.
The videos that the Pentagon released, now this thing that falls from 28,000 feet down to sea level, 1 second.
Gosh.
So if you look at them, you know, them hide them cliff divers in Mexico that can dive, you know, 90 feet off of a cliff. Yeah. It takes them 3 seconds. It takes them 3 seconds to hit the water.
Yeah.
Well, 2.5 seconds hit the water. And and that's at a four G force. Right. And our body can stand about between 6 and 8. Now can you imagine 28,000 feet in 1 second? Oh, come on.
No, not at all. I feel like I would be turned inside out if I went.
And now they're showing a video that where they can go underwater. You know, so
right.
So that's the I've just seen that one. They call it a USO.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I never heard that until object. Yeah.
Yeah, they can submerge.
So a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
A few months ago, maybe.
They're no longer called UFOs, or now they refer them as UAPs.
Unidentified aerial phenomenon. Yeah.
Right, right. Right.
Yeah, and I'm a geek too. That's all right. Jared can make fun of me later.
No, a lot of this stuff is new. I didn't even know you had. I didn't know you did paranormal investigation until 20 minutes ago.
Well, the bad part there are some really good teams out there, and sometimes I tick some people off when I say I go against their equipment, and I'm not dogging the equipment. You know, I think that there's a time and place for it. You know, but to right. me. It's your body, man. If like myself, you know, and I had a crew out when I was filming my documentary, you know, I've got actors and lighting crew and sound crew, and we're all there on this bridge in Pennsylvania. I spend 6 hours there and there's nothing, yeah. Not a doggone thing. So, and it's a highly active area. It wasn't until I sent my crew up the road and I said, you know, I'm going to get down in that gully. I want to get some pictures up facing the bridge, you know. And so I'm down in the woods, you know, I'm getting myself and I'm pushed from behind. I mean, like somebody actually punched me in the back.
Gosh.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, then you start talking to yourself, oh, that was just a muscle spasm, you know, right. Bam, I'm headed again. Or like somebody takes your finger, like a real hard flick on behind your ear.
Oh yeah. No, I'll be running like a,
I'm getting up. I'm as old as I am, I'm traveling up that little bin bank thing, you know, and the actress I had brought there to play the ghost that was supposed to be on the bridge.
Yeah.
Blame myself because I put her in a position I shouldn't have put her in because she wanted a bodyguard under the bridge while she was on that bridge. And that, since I was running low on people that showed up that day, I only like three of us showed up. I was even thinking about scrubbing the whole thing, but she was insisting, well, since she was there, she wanted to do it. And I said, fine. I had to leave her on that bridge by herself, like for maybe 3 minutes. So I got back top the bridge and come back down and film her while she's standing on the bridge. She was petrified, man. I mean, so
it was 3 minutes time.
In 3 minutes time, what she was confronted with in those 3 minutes, it was wild, man. It's like, so I didn't get nothing on my equipment, but
nothing on the grid. It's all
nothing,
all
personal. Not a single thing.
I got called in to look at an antique shop. It was a pretty decent size antique shop. The layout was kind of weird. So like you walk in, what was its ground floor, and it had a walkway that went all the way around, kind of square shaped. And there was a big hole in the center that looked down to the basement level. And so we were walking around. You know, she was telling us some stuff that was going on. And then we walked downstairs and. You know, doing the same thing, just kind of chatting about some of the experience. She's like, you know, some people say that there's, you know, a young child that's down here that, you know, likes to hold your hand or, you know, tug on your shirt, you know, just kind of play with you a little bit. And I was like, all right, that's kind of cool. I'm writing down some notes and walking around and I feel something like, it's like, man, it's like my hand feels like it's going to sleep, you know? So I kept bringing it up and shaking it. And I guess I said something a little bit louder about it. And the lady turned around. She's like, what'd you say about your hand? I was like, I don't know. It feels like it's falling asleep. You know, it has some weird little tingle thing going on. And I just have to pick it up and shake it and I'm okay. You know, it's just something weird. She's like, oh, well, he's grabbing your hand.
Oh, I'm out the door, dude.
She's like, it feels like static, you know, like exactly like your hand's falling asleep. I was like, yeah. That's exactly what it feels like. And every time I put it back down, you know, on my side, just hanging down by my leg, you know, walking, is when I feel it. And as soon as I bring it up and hold it up here, I don't feel it anymore. And every single time, grab my hand, I was like, man, that's the weirdest feeling I've ever experienced before. It is. It's super strange.
Known people, other investigators that have been bitten by either a child spirit or an animal. They said there's animal spirits out there too, you know. So I think Summer was talking about your relative that was somehow connected with the Salem witch trials. I went to a Erie, Pennsylvania cemetery. I went there because I was checking out the there's a place there called the Vampire Crypt. There's no names on this crypt at all. So there's seven people in this crypt and there's no name. wouldn't you think you would say there's who's in that crypt? But if you look it up, if you Google it or check out the Vampire Crypt in Erie, PA. That same cemetery is, they call it the Witch's Circle. There's burnt tombstones that say that it was a witch from the grave that was being taken by the devil. That was really interesting. I went, sure. I mean.
Yeah, I just looked up that that Vampire Crypt. That's an ominous looking little crypt.
Yeah, that's.
And what got me was it was built in 1850. But if you look at some of the tombstones in there died in 1835. So that meant they moved that body there after 1850. Right. So there's been a lot of these spots that were pre-1850 had a lot of activity. And inside that witch's circle, they call it the witch's circle, a coyote has seen run through that area, or people have been bitten in that area. And I was there and we didn't see nothing, but I did feel it at the Vampire Crypt. I did feel the cool, ice cold breeze that went through me when I touched the Vampire Crypt. So it's there's a chain, there's a iron gate. If you're looking at it, there's an iron gate in front of the crypt. And inside that iron gate, there's another metal mesh with a padlock on it. Because they do not want you getting in there.
Yeah, I had to go and look at some more pictures, but yeah. See, that is creepy as all get out.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying that it was a Romanian businessman or something.
Romanian businessman, and supposedly after he died, then there was people that was bitten and sucked out their blood of that area. You know, all their blood is drained out of them. So after he passed away.
Huh. And it was funny that it was Romanian, because like that is literally where, you know, the story of Dracula comes from.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you check out some of the stories that were associated with that Vampire Crypt, I mean, and I talked to a few of the groundspeople at that cemetery that confirmed a few of those stories. So on your podcast, you have you started that, what, this year, or was it started last year?
Yeah, it started like our first episode went live early November of 2021. Yeah, so it was kind of cool. It took us a couple months, I think, to get everything together. You know, me and Jared were just chatting one night. And he's like, you know, I've thought about starting a podcast. And I was like, it's funny you say that. I've kind of been tossing that around too. I was like, what do you think? What do you want to do it on? You know, what's your thoughts? And, you know, we're both fairly political and, mm-hmm. you know, have kind of a lot of the same viewpoints on things. And so we're like, dude, let's do it, you know, on politics or current events. And, you know, we do some religious type stuff with it as well. And so we just kind of started to plan things. And I was in there messing around with intros and outros. And we were trying to take some time and, you know, get some topics together and stuff like that. So
is it just, you have guests on there?
Yeah, typically it's just me and Jared chatting. We, our last episode that we had, we actually had a gentleman from Canada on with us. He's got a podcast. It's called Critical Podcast. And, and he joined us. We're talking about the Freedom Truckers. And since he lived up there, he was able to give us, you know, a lot of information on that. So it was a really fun and interesting episode, right?
Super cool dude.
Yeah, he was awesome.
What's the name of the podcast?
It's called The Resistance, a Contramundum Podcast.
So I'll put the links on the bottom of this.
Well, we're not on YouTube yet. We have a YouTube account, but we haven't started doing anything with that yet. But we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and of course, our host site is Red Circle, and then Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, you know, all your major, you know, podcasting hosts, pretty much. You can find us. Just got to type in The Resistance. Make sure you have that dash after Resistance and throw that A in there, and then we should pop right up. So
now we'll put the links in there. And thank you for coming on and sharing your stories today. I appreciate it. And I found out what the
the wood booger.
The wood booger. Yeah.
Look up Norton, Virginia. They've got like a whole thing around it, man. It's funny.
Thank you, Summer, Carl, Brian. It's been my pleasure.
Hey, thank you for having us on here, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun. Like I said, we're trying to network and, you know, help get our name out there a little bit and, you know, make some friends along the way. And
that's what it's all about. You know, the people you meet and the more you network, podcasts will grow.
It's cool talking about other things too, branching out a little bit.
It's been an absolute blast. And I was telling you earlier, you know, we had another one planned, a guest spot, and it's with Eleanor Wagner.
I just had her on the show.
Yeah. We've been chatting with her. She wants to hook up with us sometime in March, and and do a chat as well. So yeah, we've got that. And then we also have Conservative Conversations podcast. And, you know, they're kind of, you know, the same political stance, just kind of chat about some current events and what the political atmosphere looks like at the time. So,
yeah, I think if you stay with your theme that you're going with, you'll do good. You know, what I found where podcasts don't make it, like, I mean, I'm paranormal, so it doesn't pay for me to put political on here or too much Christian even on here, because, you know, it's just funny how even with paranormal, I lose some listeners when I talk about spirits and ghosts. They want to hear nothing but UFOs. Or I haven't talked too much about the cryptids, you know, or the fae people or the little fays and the, you know, so there's so much out there, you know, Loch Ness, it's a Dogman, Mothman, Owlman, Shadow People. And there's,
at Skinwalker Ranch.
Skinwalker. I did do Skinwalker. That was interesting. You know, and then you have the Native Americans who also have their different beliefs, you know. And it's a wide field. I try to cover most of it, you know. I haven't did too much on the woodworker, but...
Speaking of the Native Americans, my wife's Native American. And there's this thing, like, I said something about little people one time. And, like, that's a no-no for them. But she won't even explain why. What is that?
It is because it's to the little people, to them, is evil. Even the fae. I mean, the fae can be vicious little. Like, they can be, like, under your bed. Or they can, like, they're like this, only like this tall. They're little. They're vicious. And with Native Americans, what I've found out so far, and I forget they're called something, and they have a name. But it basically is like the fae. And they live like in the trees, hollowed out trees. They're wicked. I mean, yeah, they're bad. You know, there are certain things that the Native Americans do believe in that to me makes a lot of sense. I mean, so some people don't get it. You know, they have like they really worship the earth. You know, the ground. So yes. Whenever you dig and you're disrupting earth, it's like at Skinwalkers. They didn't want to dig there. Because of the native culture, and you can release the skinwalkers.
That sounds horrifying. I've never heard of that. I don't want to research it either.
Brian, Summer, thank you.
All right, Al, thanks for having us on, man. I really appreciate that.
I want to thank Brian, Jared, and Summer for sharing their stories, and I will have their links at the bottom of this podcast. Jared asked me a question during the interview about the little people in the Native American culture. I thought I gave him a pretty good answer, but there's so many different stories with different Indian tribes. I'm going to add a little bit more to that. I found this on the web, and it was written by David Ferris, and it was posted in the Edmund Life and Leisure publication. David writes, "Cultures from all around the world tell us about small humanoids with magical powers. Gnomes, fairies, elves, share similarities with little people tales of the North American Indians. However, the little people are believed by many of these Native American people to be more than myth or legend. And usually it comes to medicine men or witch doctors. Myths of the Cherokee, which was published between 1897 and 1898, describes these little people as hardly reaching up to a man's knee, but well-shaped and handsome, with long hair falling almost to the ground. It was astounding as more than 100 years later, this magical race of little people is still very real to those who learned the legend from their elders. One example is the belief in a race of small magical beings called the Yanwi Tasansti. In an article published in 1984, an issue of the Mid-American Folklore collected from the Cherokee Indians, the little people of the Cherokee folklore were capable of doing good deeds for people who treated them with respect. However, to look upon one was bad luck, potentially resulting in premature death. Usually those who encounter the little people are warned by them not to tell others. It is considered bad luck to even speak of the little people. Instead, they are more safely referred to as a skilly, which means witch or ghosts. Sometimes humans build their homes near the habitat of the Yanwi Tasansti It is important to leave food for them and not to block any of their paths. If the little beings were pleased, they did chores at night, like plowing fields and harvesting crops. Sometimes the people in the houses hear the work being done, but know not to look outside. The little people are known to attach themselves to certain areas. This was the case with a 90-year-old woman, considered a witch or medicine doctor. She claimed that the tiny beings made a path on the west side of her house. They used to come nightly to her house for food until a water line was installed, blocking their path and putting an end to their visits. This story illustrates one consistent aspect of the little people's legend that crosses tribal cultures: their association with medicine men and other people of a spiritual nature. Now, the Cherokee tell of how their ancestors were accompanied by the little people along the Trail of Tears. In 1838, the Cherokee people were forced to leave their home in Georgia and traveled to a foreign territory now called Oklahoma. The Yanui Tsansi served as protectors and the comforters during this tragic event in American history. Before the tribe migrated, they were given the gift of an everlasting fire. During the months of the trail, through wind, snow, and rain, the little people kept the fire safely burning. According to Cherokee legend, the little people continue to protect the fire that still burns today. A strange article appeared in the 1976 winter issue of Oklahoma Today magazine about the little people in Oklahoma, complete with a photograph of one of the creatures. The eerie tale of medicine men and spirit guides come from the Yellow Hills east of Ardmore, Oklahoma. The Choctaw people knew that medicine men were aided by leprechauns who led doctors to various herbs needed to cure the ailing. Only the medicine men could see those special beings who appeared to all others as glowing lights. The Cheyenne referred to them as knee-high demons. Legend also suggests they feed on humans. They're also known as tiny people eaters. Certain places become known as the habitat of the little people. Wyoming is a state rich in little people lore. The mystery of the dwarf demons, which mentions a Casper, Wyoming attorney who found a mummy measuring 20 inches in height. Others in the area claim to have come into possession of pygmy mummies and skulls. In 1932 or 1934, 60 miles southwest of Casper in the Pedro Mountains, the mummified body of a tiny human was found sitting on a ledge inside of a cave. Its seated height was 6.5 inches, and standing it would have been about 15 inches tall. It had long white hair, a full set of teeth, and adult body hair. In 1950, it was brought to the American Museum of Natural History in New York and examined by museum's authority anthropology Dr. Harry Shapiro. Hair samples determined the mummy was human, and an x-ray revealed that it did have a skeletal structure. The doctor also noted that the anomalous arrangement of the bones and the unusual large eye sockets. Since 1975, its whereabouts are unknown. Perhaps human beings have encountered diminutive entities throughout history, and reports have differed according to cultures. But one fact remains with a lot of these stories. They were basically knee-high, had long hair, were good-looking, full set of teeth, and they ate humans. So I can understand why Jordan's wife does not want to talk about the little people. Again, go to the Resistance podcast. The links of the podcast is at the bottom of this episode. Thank you, Jordan, Brian, and Summer. It was my privilege to have you on the show today, and I'll see you all in 2 weeks with another great episode of Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Oh,